Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. Let me mention before we begin the program that Global Research is in fundraising mode. We rely solely on help from our readers, reflecting now on the website. It's readers alone who keep Global Research functioning. It accepts no funding whatsoever from sources like corporate. Well, what corporation would ever want to do support what we do? My goodness, we take aim at them all the time. So we need reader support. Go to globalresearch.ca. There's information in the top left-hand column under news. The column to the right has feature articles. Go there, and we most certainly would appreciate your support. And, of course, the program and the website and this program are very much linked together. We do the same things, one on air and the other in print. And today, my guest, I'm delighted to have on Professor John Cozzi. He's a retired philosophy and logic professor. He now blogs on social, political, and economic issues. He taught for 20 years, and he was a writer for another 20. And the easy way to find John and his writings and information about him, he has two websites. I'll give you the easy one, jcozy.com. And John's articles are on Global Research as well, so you can find them there. John wrote an article about the myth of supply and demand. I'm using my own language now. That attracted me. I was intrigued by it. As a business school graduate, the 50 years coming up this February, MBA no less. Well, they taught me a little bit about that. I can mention as we go along. But he wrote that article. And John, are we still on? I heard a nasty click there.
Oh, yes, I'm here.
I'm going through a very long introduction. When I hear clicks, I get nervous that we got disconnected.
I know what you mean. That's one of the reasons I disabled call waiting.
I'll say hello to you in the midst of my introduction, but we'll pick it up again. Oh, let me mention one thing, John. We have four commercial breaks. When you hear music, they're coming, and I'll interrupt. We get a little lead time, so we don't have to quickly jump off. But your Flora Supply and Demand article, you wrote two others on the economic crisis, the fact that this absolutely will not be a normal cyclical recovery. My God, we're going through what I like to call an economic holocaust. There's nothing normal about this, so the recovery won't be. And then your newest article, just about a week ago, or roughly a week ago, on the global crisis, is economics rational? John, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you on. And it's wonderful to know that a philosophy and logic professor could get into the mundane things of what really affects people on a day-to-day basis. You can go back to Aristotle and those fellows, but we can bring it right up to date and talk about how people are suffering because bad policy deliberately inflicts this kind of a terrible situation on them. But you pick it up, and then we'll take a break in a moment when a break comes. It's coming very shortly. But you start, John.
I was just going to say that I've long held that mankind's major problems are mankind's creations. There are so many things that human beings should really be worrying about that we really have very little control over, like natural disasters and things of that sort. Yet we don't pay any attention to those.
Oh, indeed. Now they're going to break away, so I'll interrupt and we'll be right back.
That'll be fine.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
John Cozzi. We're talking about issues economic, starting off with gee, about as basic an idea as there is, going back, a long way, supply and demand. John, in business school, I was taught a partial truth. They wouldn't dare teach me the most important part, but they told me that, they taught me that the law of pricing really is something to the effect that suppliers of goods and services charge what the market will bear. In other words, they'll charge whatever they can get away with. Well, of course, they do charge whatever they can get away with. But what they left out was how markets are manipulated. And the best, most recent examples, aside from the financial markets that are grossly manipulated on a daily basis, last year, the horrendous run-up in prices for food, oil, and gas that had absolutely nothing to do with the demand for these products. So you wrote an article about the myth of the law of supply and demand.
I consider myself basically a logician and a teacher. I'm not an economist, and I'm not a historian or anything else. And when I look at whatever I hear or what an economist propound, I ask myself, now what sense does that make? Does it make any sense at all? And when I looked at the law of supply and demand and took it apart, which is one of my favorite techniques, taking things to pieces, I began to notice that there really was nothing there. There was no content to that law. The way it's set up, it looks like a demand and supply are somehow related, but when you look at the market, how the market actually functions in the retail world, companies never raise prices to cut demand. They often lower prices to increase demand, but they never raise prices to cut demand. I mean, when there's an oil shortage or a gasoline shortage and automobiles are lined up at gas stations, the proprietors don't run out and raise the price that people drive off. They just sell the stuff till it's all gone. So it made me wonder about, you know, what's going on here with this law of supply and demand. And when I began to take apart the descriptions of it that you find in textbooks, you find out that there's nothing there. It's not based on anything whatsoever but a mere notion, an idea that somebody had. Nobody even knows who propounded the idea. And when you realize that, you begin to realize what fakery all of this stuff is. So I wrote that article and then tried to tie it to something more prominent, current, like the global crisis.
Oh, indeed. I think people, experts in commodities like oil, they know full well that the demand for oil during good times when economies are growing, oil usage grows at a very modest and steady pace. And when things are bad, it can fall off generally a little modestly. I mean, people still drive their cars. Factories still operate less so than during good times. But there are not dramatic changes in the use of these basic commodities. And food, my goodness, good or bad times, people still have to eat. They can substitute. They can eat oatmeal instead of steak, but they still have to eat. So I guess demand for individual foods can vary a little bit. I have no idea how people regulate their diets. I eat for health. I don't eat for any other reason. Well, also because I get hungry.
Yeah, you get hungry. The thing that I've noticed over the years is the enormous disconnect from what producers say at one point in time when they want to raise prices and what they say later on when prices come down. For instance, the oil companies were talking about, you know, the need to raise prices because demand had increased all over the world, especially in China. But all of a sudden, consumption in America dropped or oil supplies increased or whatever, and prices came down. And China dropped out of the picture entirely, as though all of the Chinese demand for oil disappeared. You know, and I asked myself, you know, that can't possibly be true. There's some manipulation going on here, and it happens all of the time. I know the oil. I live on the Gulf Coast, basically close to the Gulf Coast, and where there are a lot of oil refineries. And it always amazed me that all of the oil refineries on the Gulf Coast shut down the same time of the year for maintenance. And, of course, prices go up during that time. because they claim, you know, supply is down. But that's purely a technique merely to raise prices. But, I mean, they could schedule those maintenance shutdowns over long periods of time and reduce that possibility completely. It's just prevarication on the part of business in order to squeeze more money out of people.
Oh, indeed. And, of course, they may shut down in the Gulf, but there are oil refineries all around the world.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, they can do whatever they choose to do. And, again, of course, the media is complicit in this racket, John. They'll feed the lies that they want to convey to people. And, you know, ordinary people aren't experts in any of this stuff. So
Neither are economists.
Well, I'm not an economist, but hopefully I'm not stupid. And I get upset when I think about the lies that were taught me, or the biggest lie of all, the omissions that were never taught me.
Yeah.
I mean, this big stuff like the blatant manipulation that goes on all the time. We could talk more when we get into the other economic articles about how it's done to the financial markets. My goodness, I mean, there are actually government-established agencies to manipulate markets.
That's right, yeah.
Most people don't know that. One is the Plunge Protection Team. But there are at least two more I know about, and I'll mention them afterwards. But again, my goodness. I mean, all this rot that we're taught that comes through the media. Now, of course, listening to this program and hearing people like you, John, and following globalresearch.ca, people get very well informed and they realize exactly what's going on. We just don't have enough of us, John. We need to get many more people educated into the most important things that affect our lives. There are a lot of things that it's nice to know them, but we can live very well without them. But the things that touch our lives directly, especially during dire times like now, we need to know this stuff so we can hold our political leaders accountable, because they are selling us down the river, plain and simple.
Yeah, I had a comment from a reader about one of my articles, and he said that I was beating a dead horse, that none of this was going to change anything. And I said, I didn't do it because I thought what I wrote was going to change things. I did it because, and I quoted him, Burke's aphorism, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And I said, that's wrong, because people who do nothing are not good men. And I may not have be doing much by writing these articles, but at least I wasn't doing nothing. And it's, yeah, I agree with you. It's important that somebody stand up and tell the world the truth. Whether or not we succeed, is another matter. If we do, fine. If we don't, well, at least we tried.
John, one of my favorite books, and I had the author on my program a year or so ago, Frances Fox Bivens, sociologist, wrote a book called Challenging Authority, and she cited four times in U.S. history when people could really change the system. The idea that beating a dead horse, I don't buy that argument at all. I mean, it's not easy, but we did things like end slavery in this country. At one time, that was thought to be an impossibility, but it was done. It didn't happen overnight. And, John, you and I could write hundreds of articles, and that alone isn't going to change the world. But as more and more people catch on to these awful things that are harming them personally, they tend to get upset about that. And that's the way change comes. So we ended slavery. We had the labor movement. We had the civil rights movement. Women got the right to vote. I mean, some big things happened that never were handed to us. It was grassroots activism that got this stuff to become the new way of doing things. So we have a terrible system now that just seems to get worse and worse all the time. These crises seem to get big. We're going through an economic holocaust right now, and it never had to happen. It was all done by design. I'm absolutely, positively convinced of it, that this was manipulated to happen. It's happened before. We did it to the East Asian tigers in 1997. Well, that was regional. So now they're doing to the planet what was done to East Asia. It spread beyond East Asia, because this stuff seems to spread. But it was done to them, and it was basically to siphon more wealth to to the financial manipulators who do this kind of stuff. So it's being done now. Not now, it's the big Wall Street firms, the big bankers, or call them whatever you want to call them. And we can get into that. You talk about this will not be a normal economic recovery. It sure won't, because they inflicted this with Bill Engel, another one of my favorite guests on this program. He was on Monday. He calls it a financial tsunami. I think it's a lot. He began writing about that well over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, going back to an early article. He kept writing more and more articles on this as events developed. And now I just think it's a global holocaust, economic holocaust, that is just engulfing countries all over the world, and it is so broad and so deep that this will not be a normal recovery, John. And you wrote about that.
Yeah, you know, an earlier article I put on Global Research was something that titled something like "Capitalism Snuffs Out the Enlightenment's Candle," and the point I was making in that article that capitalism exists only to maintain the ancient regime, or the old order. And the old order consists of privileged and non-privileged, and the non-privileged are really thought very much of as the, you know, beasts of burden.
And we hear the band playing again.
Yeah, okay.
let's take another break, John, and
okay.
We'll be right back. Another one. Of the hour, and then one more after that. We have a lot of time left.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with John Cozy. We're talking about things economic and John's writings. John, pick up where you left off, if you remember your train of thought.
Yeah, I was talking about one of the other articles I wrote called "Capitalism Snuffs Out the Enlightenment's Candle," and the point I was trying to make in that was that the goal of capitalism is not to enhance the economic lives of people, but merely to maintain the status quo, or what the French called the ancient regime or old order. And although I didn't say so in that article, one of the things that led me to that was, you know, there's an article by Lenin somewhere that he published in European newspapers, and he said that in order to judge any policy or practice, you need to ask yourself the question, who stands to gain? And if you look at capitalist economics, or classical, what's called classical economics or neoclassical economics now, I don't know why it's done that. The privileged in society do well in good times, and they provide people with the opportunities for a short while to acquire assets at very high prices. And then the privileged managed to engineer a crash during which the people who paid high prices for the meager assets they've acquired now lose them all, and the rich pick those assets up at the bargain prices, so that, you know, the privileged gain whether the economy is good or the economy is bad. And this has been going on now for more than 200 years, and it goes on. Consistently, it happens in America at least about once every 14 or 15 years. So, you know, a person who, you know, buys a house on a 30-year mortgage is bound to lose it sometime or other during that period of time, unless, you know, he has a windfall in income.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a real racket.
Oh, it's a racket. It's why I say this absolutely no doubt in the world that this current crisis was engineered. You knock down values of everything from stocks, commodities, homes, small business. You crush competition. You let the big guys consolidate and get bigger, have more power. You let them buy assets at fire sale prices. That went to the heart of what went on against East Asia in 1997. Also to open those markets to let the predatory American corporations in. But again, I mean, not only let them in, but let them in on the cheap. And one of the big fallout toll of that crisis was the prosperous middle class in the Asian Tiger countries was just decimated. One country after another, South Korea and Taiwan and Indonesia, and roughly 24 million people that were in good shape before it broke were thrust into poverty. And manipulators, hot money manipulators that flooded the market and bought up real estate and stocks and so on, yanked their money out, attacking the weakest country first, Thailand, and their currency, the baht. And people who were eulogized in the business media here, people like George Soros, who was one of the leading predators, who went in and attacked that currency. There's no reason to do it, but they did it. It was weak, and they brought the country down, and then they shifted from one country to the next. Well, they're attacking the whole planet now, John, going at everybody.
All the weak economies have been taken over. Now the only economies left are ones like ours, and we're going down too.
Oh, we're going down too. A phrase that I like to use now is they want to turn America into Guatemala, and they are doing it slowly, a lot faster over the past 12 months. But the millions of people losing their homes, my God, the job loss is unbelievable, and the numbers that they put out are pure fiction. I've had great economists in this program saying we're losing somewhere between 800,000 and a million jobs per month, at least since last November. And the unemployment rate, economist John Williams has been on this program. He reverse engineers the phony government data to get it back into the form it was designed to be, not the way it was manipulated to be where it is now. So they make the bad numbers look better. I guess the good numbers look better as well. And he calculates unemployment before the latest figure comes out this Friday, when a new number will come out. His last number was 19.8%, not 8.5%. And that includes discouraged workers and involuntary part-timers who may work as little as 1 hour in a month, and so on and so forth. And you throw it all together in an honest calculation, he comes up with 19.8%. I mean, this is serious, serious stuff. He's got a GDP declining a lot steeper than the official numbers. And we got a terrible number today, John. We got a first quarter number that was 6.1%. And it was about the same number the previous quarter, end of the last year. So we're in a lot of trouble, but they're doing this stuff. I wonder whether it's been worse than they had planned. I don't know.
Well, nobody knows. Of course, even the planners may not know that yet. But everybody should be aware by now that econometrics is a bogus business. It's very easy to calculate an honest unemployment rate. For instance, all you have to do is take the population and count the number of people, the number of adults, say, over 18, and then look at how many of them are full-time employed, and it's easy to calculate a true unemployment rate. But nobody wants to do that for all sorts of nefarious reasons.
Oh, indeed.
Which makes the whole thing bogus. And GDP is the same way.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with John Cozy. John, let me throw one other thing in, too, because it's making around-the-clock screaming headlines. And it's an utter scam, this swine flu business. Screamy headlines about a potential pandemic and getting people absolutely scared to death that they're going to die. Well, number one, I think it's a way to distract people from the real things they ought to be thinking about and worrying about. But there's a lot of material on global research. My co-host, Michelle Jasudowski, a couple of days ago, he had an article about how Asian flu, I guess it was a couple of years ago, enriched the big drug companies that had vaccines. Well, it's the same idea now. These biotech companies will make a fortune on this, and the drugs they put out are so dangerous that nobody should touch those drugs. Nobody should be allow themselves to be vaccinated by this stuff. Some of it isn't even tested properly. It's unsafe. It's very dangerous. So the cure, the disease, is something that most likely nobody needs to worry about. I mean, if you go looking for somebody with swine flu and you kiss them, then maybe you'll have a problem and you'll get sick. Probably you won't die, but you may get sick. But if you take this vaccine, heaven only knows what may happen to you. There's a top feature article today on Global Research by Phil Engel, Flying Pigs, Tamiflu, and Factory Farms.
I'm
sorry, John, you go ahead.
I said I just read it this morning.
Oh, you just read the article?
Yeah.
Well, the idea of spreading these awful rumors that we may be heading into a pandemic. Well, it's a bunch of rubbish. He mentioned Mexico in the article, John, where supposedly they're claiming 150-odd deaths so far. And Bill says, well, they're really only seven.
What's happening is scary on many fronts. Agribusiness is really frightening. Genetically modified foods is frightening. It's easy, to create this stuff. You can do it in the lab, and it works. But nobody knows what the long term effects of any of this stuff can possibly be. And we could destroy the whole food chain in no time, by messing up one of these genetic modifications. And there's no reason to think that human beings can get it right, because we've gotten it wrong far too many times. It's a frightening thing, and it's only being done to make money.
Oh, absolutely. Bill Engel wrote a very important book on GMO foods, John, called Seeds of Destruction, and we've talked about it on this program. I mean, he shows how these companies, four or five agribusiness giants, literally want to control the world's entire food supply and make it all GMO. And he quoted studies, and I quoted studies. I wrote about this stuff, quoting studies showing incontrovertible evidence that this stuff absolutely is harmful to human health. And if we had an honest government, we would ban it. We would not allow this kind of stuff to be ingested by people. But it literally is sanctioned by the government. It began back in the Bush Sr.'s time, where he issued an executive order that basically said, GMO and regular, honest, healthy food are substantially equivalent. He was a damn liar, to put it bluntly.
He was stupid. it's a funny thing about human beings. When I was a college student, I was taught that during early years of science, the idea was to get human beings to act in conformity with nature. If we learned, how nature operated and acted in conformity with it, we'd all be all better off. But human beings went and twisted that into change nature to suit human predilections or whatever, and that has turned out to be an enormous disaster.
Well, you hit the nail on the head when you talk about, in your article, is economics rational? Yeah, it sure is rational in the sense that it lets the rich and powerful interest, the power structure, just lump them all together and call them that, and mainly the financial types headquartered on Wall Street. It lets them, it's very rational for them because it enriches them so much. But in our zero-sum world, John, the more they get, the less we have to give up to make them richer. So they have a lot of money, and they need more money to make even more money. And this just keeps going and going and going. And the richer they get, the poorer we get. And this is their design. This is what they have in mind. And this is what's going on. And the government is their handmaiden, arranging the whole thing for them.
Yeah, not only the government, but the way they've co-opted the press. That's scary. I was thinking the other day about the French Revolution. The French Revolution would never have succeeded if the press in Paris, which is made up of intellectuals publishing their own stuff very much as we do now on global research, hadn't been on the side of the people. And in at least in America today, and I think probably the rest of the developed world, too, perhaps even the entire world, the press has been taken over entirely by business. And, you know, you don't get the truth. Even when they tell, you know, what appears to be the truth, it's only a partial truth. And I just shudder at the ignorance that gets by and becomes public news. Like, you know, Hillary Clinton the other day went on television and said that Hamas had to renounce violence. And I thought to myself, why the hell doesn't Hamas say that they would renounce violence when the United States does? I mean, you know, there's such obvious stupidity, and yet the news reports it as though somehow or other it were worthy of notice. And I, you know, I don't understand it. I don't understand how the people doing the news, these individual people who call themselves journalists, could have succumbed to this kind of treat thing. I don't know. I don't understand it. I just don't.
It pays well, John. Their souls were for sale, and they sold out for the system, and they're well paid for it. At least the more prominent ones. When you get to cable television, you get a bunch of really very mediocre people that they hire on the cheap, and they have a teleprompter, and I guess they read whatever comes across that teleprompter.
Yeah, that's what happens. And, you know, I know that, but what amazes me is that among the many thousands of these people that there are, not a single one is willing to stand up and say, you know, hey, you know, this is wrong, guys.
Oh, absolutely. When somebody does it occasionally, John, they yank them out. There are occasional exceptions, but they don't last very long. The BBC had an episode a few years ago where one of their reporters, Andrew Gilligan, reported some very nasty truths. They not only fired him, they fired the management of BBC from the top people in BBC because they did let his kind of report go over the airwaves. And, of course, people need to understand that the BBC is owned by the British government.
Yeah, it's a governmental mouthpiece. Yeah.
And the people of Britain have to pay for this thing whether they want it or not. They are taxed to pay for this propaganda service.
Yeah.
John, your point is so well taken. To me, the state of the media is absolutely the number one issue that we have to deal with. The corrupted media, of course, they're all big corporations, and their advertisers are the other big corporations. So one hand feeds the other.
Yeah.
They're in this thing together, and they feed us this corrupted nonsense to keep us all distracted, whatever. One of the media critics of years back, I think it was Neil Postman. I may be wrong, but he refers to people in this country. This was 20, 30 years ago, as the most over entertained, under informed people in the world, which of course is true. Of course, misinformed. We fit all this propaganda, but we've got more movies and more sports and more of everything we don't need, and we have absolutely nothing of what we need most.
Yeah, I have an article that I wrote before I got affiliated with Global Research. It's on my website. I think it's called something like United States of Entertainment.
Exactly.
In which I point out the influence that the mass media has had and how even news programs, because they are mass media generated nowadays, have become basically entertainment and not information providers. It's an interesting article. You may want to go look at it.
Oh, I will. And it's on your. It's not on Global Research. It's on your website.
No. It's on my. It's an older article, and it's on my website, jcosey.com.
Oh, I will do that.
United States of Entertainment.
That's
what it's called.
Oh, I love that title, John. Indeed, it's and your theme, I know, is the reason why I've gotten to abhor what comes over that TV screen. I live in a building where I get hundreds of cable TV channels, whether I want them or not. It comes with my monthly assessment, and if I could get them to lower my assessment and take them all away, I would say, well, do it right now. I mean, just do it right now.
Yeah, I often tell my wife hundreds of channels to watch and not one worth it.
There's not a damn one worth watching.
Yeah.
The only thing on it, John, is there are some music channels, all music, no talk.
Yeah.
And they have two classical music channels, and I can turn that on, and I can keep it on as background music, and no commercials, no announces, just from one selection to the next. And that's very pleasant. But aside, just leave me those two channels and take off the other 300 or 400, whatever is left. And the only thing it does, well, I could get by with those two. The only time I turn on something that has people talking or whatever is when I get into bed at night to turn some silly movie on to get me sleepy in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, my wife does that. Television is an interesting thing. I watch the history channels every once in a while, okay? And I'm amazed, and I ask myself, how can I believe what these programs supposedly teach when they're advertisements? They're financed by advertisements that are obvious scams and lies.
Oh, indeed.
You know, I mean, now how can a television station claim, you know, to be teaching the truth about history if it's financed by people selling junk? It's just a contradiction that boggles my mind.
It's very disturbing. I think more and more people are finding out just how we're being fed the potty line that we need to really fight against. There's a strong effort in the country for media reform. There's an organization I support called Free Press, great media analysts, scholars, critics like Bob McChesney was one of the founders of it. He's been on this program a couple of times. And we need to change the system. If people knew the half of what was going on, way back when, John, you may remember the Henry Ford quote. I don't remember it verbatim. But it was something to the effect that if people knew the half of what was going on, would have a revolution.
Yeah.
My God, if people knew 10% of the ugly truth today, would have a revolution. And Thomas Jefferson, for one, said we ought to have one every generation.
Yeah, he's certainly right about that.
Oh, and in the Declaration of Independence, he said very clearly that if we have a government that doesn't serve us, we need to throw it out and get one that does serve us.
That's right.
Well, if it was good enough for Thomas Jefferson, it sure is good enough for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't good enough for people like Alexander Hamilton.
he was the Tim Geithner of his day.
Yes, he sure was, wasn't he?
I guess his image is still on is it the $20 bill?
I don't know, one of them. I don't get many of those, so I don't know.
Well, there's an easy solution to the economic crisis we have now. It's so easy. It's the one that never will be taken. The root of today's problem, aside from the greed for the rich to get richer, is that we have a private cartel banking, a private banking cartel controlling the nation's money and charging everybody interest on what should be interest-free, at least to the government. The government's money should be interest-free to the government. If we had a system where the government, as the Constitution mandates, if the government printed its own money, it not only would be interest-free, there'd be no national debt, there'd be no inflation, we would have prosperity, because the history that I know and have read about says that whenever it was done this way, that was the outcome. And we had it in this country during the early colonial days before the Revolutionary War, where the colonists printed their own script. Again, they had prosperity, they had no inflation. I guess employment was, if it wasn't full, it was pretty healthy. They had a growing, healthy economy. It was so good that what really sparked the War of Independence was the Bank of England didn't like this system because it cut them out of the deal to charge us interest.
Yeah, there's another article out on my website that I wrote some time ago called "It's a Banker's World." And you might want to take a look at that, too, if you get a chance, because central banking, especially, is the Ponzi scheme of all times. Banking is the only legal racket in the world.
Oh, it's the only legal racket. But it's actually illegal, at least here, John, because the Constitution says only the government, only the Congress can coin money. That was the word used. But coin, print, call it what you will. Only the government can do that, not privately owned banks. But the Federal Reserve Act that came into existence in 1913, 2 days before Christmas, signed by a man Woodrow Wilson, who later said, I ruined my country. It was a much longer quote than that.
That's right. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. You know, that's very interesting. The trouble with I don't know about governments elsewhere, but the trouble with the government in the United States is the factions which were railed against in the Federalist Papers that we allowed to develop, and we have the tripartite government, which is supposed to exercise checks and balances. But when two or more of those three parts of the government are staffed by people of the same faction, there is no check, there is no balance, and when something is said to be unconstitutional, and rightly so, when it goes to the court, if it's a factionally dominated court, the case doesn't pass muster, and they approve it.
Absolutely, John. I mean, the checks and balances literally got wiped away during the George Bush years. But very sadly, the Obama folks are following the same pattern as George Bush. I've got an article I'll put out at the end of the week on Obama's first 100 days. A lot of that stuff is coming out now. I thought I'd wait for the 100 days to be up before I got mine up. It's all written. Tomorrow is his 100th day.
I want
to give the guy a chance to claim he's a sinner and reform in his last 24 hours. A little chance of that. But I compare him to FDR in the 1930s. And FDR was no saint, but boy, what a difference between then and now. Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to confess that I voted for Obama.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. I'm on with John Cozy. John, the hour always flies by much too fast. I lament at the end of every program, I wish I had a second hour because there's always so much more to talk about. But we have a few minutes left. I want to give it to you to add whatever thoughts you can cram in the last few minutes.
Okay, I was just going to say that I confess I voted for Obama thinking that he would be better than John McCain, and that's probably true. But I must say I've been terribly disappointed in his cabinet choices and his policies so far. Perhaps when they fail, he'll find the light. But maybe John McCain was right when he said that Obama was all talk.
Oh, he was all talk. But I think you know the history, John. I know the history as well. And when anyone is anointed with the possibility of becoming a lead candidate and getting the highest office of the land, or any key office in the power structure, there's a deal struck, and the deal is that you go along with the system, and if you won't go along with it, then you don't get the job, and if you get the job because you said you'd go along with it, and then you renege on it, we'll kill you. We've done it.
Yeah, that's true. That may be the way things are, and if so, then I guess the only conclusion we can draw is that humanity is lost. I don't know that there's any way to fight that kind of thing. I just want to say that to sum this up, what people need to start asking themselves is what they hear the truth, and what evidence for it is there, and start demanding answers instead of just accepting what they're told at face value. Unless people start to do that, it's too easy to be deceived, and deception will always cause ruin. Historically, I think that all societies have been founded on myth, and they've all collapsed because sooner or later myth clashes with reality, comes face to face with reality, and gets murdered. Unless we can get away from ideology and myth and start asking ourselves, how do we find out what the truth is about this, and start acting on on knowledge rather than a belief. The outlook for human beings, I think, is pretty grim.
Oh, I echo that completely, John. I feel sorry for the real young generation coming up. It wasn't the perfect world when we were growing up, but it was a lot different than today. And the young kids today, my God, they don't have the chances that we had 30, 40, 50 years ago. I grew up in the 40s and 50s. It just was a different time back then. It's hard to believe we've come from that to this. And I have a very grim outlook in the future unless enough people wake up and decide we're just not going to take this anymore. I mean, we want a country that is what it says it is, and we are not that at all now, and we're destroying ourselves. All empires ended up the same way, John. You know that.
Yeah.
And there are no exceptions in history, and we won't be an exception either. So we better do something before it's too late, and I'm wondering whether it's already too late. Well,
yeah,
I never lose hope. We have to fight back. Oh, my goodness, we're out of time. John, we're out of time.
Enjoy talking to you.
John, I just want to thank you for coming on. It was wonderful. I'll follow all your future writing. You will send the Global Research, right?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm working on one now.
Oh, terrific. And you will come back and we'll have another program together, right?
Anytime.
Oh, I'd love to have you, John. This was a wonderful discussion, and I thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
We'll have another live program tomorrow. Please join us then. Different topic, vitally important as well. Join us then.